I would need a million words if I tried to define all the things you mean to me. For you I'd die a thousand lives. Special kind of energy, 'cause love is born when hearts collide. Every time you touch me, you remind me that I'm still alive. So promise you never change, and I'll always be the same. We'll be dancing the same groove when we're 92, the same as 17. Same as 17. I don't really know what's right.
The Cure with Amy Cabo. Life can bring many difficult situations: domestic violence, addictions, poverty, and even sexual abuse by your loved ones. Welcome, Amy Cabo and The Cure.
Good afternoon, and welcome to The Cure Radio Show. I'm your host, Amy Cabo, with my amazing partner, Boris. By the way, happy June, devoted to the Sacred Heart of Jesus. I hope that we are all safe in these troubling times. Hope and pray that our spirits are high and that we know that God will soon see us through this and whatever else may come our way. Our show is available live on your radio, also on the app The Cure on any smartphone, and our website, godisthecure.com. We are broadcasting live from Miami through satellite, available in about 11 radios in more than 11 states, and among others, and soon after the show, any podcast player. This show deals with suffering, the tenacity of the human spirit, the will to survive, and the courage to keep moving forward, despite any obstacle, with the help of God and each other. We do provide testimonials to let people know that we are not alone. And in this show, the testimony started with me, having been a survivor from child abuse well into young adulthood. We also have experts in several fields and inspirational speakers that are willing to help us with valuable information, knowing that awareness is crucial, education is necessary, and comfort is very much needed. I do believe we're all suffering, and we hope to be a source of healing for each other. My healing came from God, but other forms of healing are presented as well to service everyone. Life can be challenging, but I always know there's always someone who cares. There's always hope. The song we played earlier was 17 by Pink Sweat. God would need a million words trying to define what we mean to him. It's when our hearts collide that you feel that special kind of energy that makes you feel alive. God promised us he'll never change, but did we stay the same? God promised that he will never lie to us. He'll guide us, but did we hold back? These last 10 days have been among the most difficult days that today's Americans have ever encountered. Anyone, no matter how strong can be, is disheartened by the mayhem, the violence, the destruction, and complete disregard for human life that has occurred. Something we didn't even think possible in the United States. What started as a peaceful protest was daily infiltrated with hate, violence, and carnage, driven by the idea of systemic racism, hiding behind the guise of Black Lives Matter due to police brutality. It's difficult to erase the images of the policeman being run over by a car, or the small business owner that was filmed after being beaten to death. And the scene was gruesome, as most injuries are usually in the head. a beloved 30-year-plus retired police captain slain for being the security guard at his friend's pawn shop. A wife was beaten by a group of thugs while the husband pleaded for her life, only to be for them to beat him senselessly to a pulp. Also, a most beloved long-term black sergeant was live-streamed as he choked on his last breath. Or the house set on fire with a small child while the thugs blocked the firefighters. Thankfully, the police were able to grab mother and child alive. Or the black security guard they shot and killed for reporting to work at the federal building. Or the four police officers ran over by the SUV, now hospitalized, among many more, fighting for their lives, like the police officer that was just recently had his head bashed with a fire hydrant. How about Amy Kale, an adolescent, beautiful girl, there as a peaceful protester who was recently killed trying to flee into someone's car when the crowd got violent, but got shot in the back and died before she was able to leave. I only saw this story once in the news. I guess there's too many, but the list goes on and on. Did their lives matter? People are afraid to step out of their houses and once again lose their freedom to support themselves. Many cities have become food deserts. There's widespread destruction and looting, leaving locals without necessary supplies. This is something never experienced with any virus or natural disaster, at least in my lifetime. I didn't even know racism existed. Is this really a skin problem or a sin problem? What's happened to our society? Could a systemic false narrative over years have made us desensitized to the value of human life? It feels like we are David against Goliath. And we see a glimmer of hope as things start to settle down. But the hurt remains. How did we come to this? Is that how far we've gone? I hope our guest can tell us what's going on. Lieutenant Colonel Sargis Sangadi was born and raised in Rezaeh, Iran. He migrated to the United States in 1980 at age 10 after the Iranian Revolution. He became his army service in 1994 after graduating from DePaul University in Chicago, Illinois, earning a Bachelor of Science in Political Science and receiving a commission in the infantry. Lieutenant Colonel Sangari is a nuclear biological chemical certified officer. Certified anti-terrorism level 1 and 2 officer, and earned his executive certificate in counterterrorism and technology from the International Institute of Counterterrorism of the Interdisciplinary Center of Israel. Sargis is now seeking to serve our country in the political arena as a Republican candidate for the 9th Congressional District of Illinois. Lieutenant Colonel Sangadi is the CEO of the Near East Center for Strategic Engagement, which he founded on September 11th in 2014 in commemoration of the Americans who were murdered in the terrorist attacks of 9/11 and in recognition of first responders who continue to suffer and die from the health effects arising from these attacks. Mr. Sangadi, thank you for being on the show. We are now live.
Abby, it's good to be here. Thank you very much for the opportunity. And I hope that, as you said, I can provide some understanding as to what's happening to your audience. At the end of the day, hope is what keeps us moving forward. And we always have to continue on that path. We can never look back. We can learn from those lessons, but we have to move forward in the new paradigms that we're going to be encountering throughout our lifetime.
Thank you, Mr. Sangari. Most importantly, thank you for your service. I just want to jump right in and discuss the riots, what we've witnessed for 9 days, now going on day 10. I always believed most people were good, not that a lot of us are bad. This seems too orchestrated, organized, and cruel for ordinary protesters. Is this really about oppression and racism, or is there a more sinister plan? I heard of multiple extremist groups, like Antifa, Boogaboo, or I don't know what the name is, Weather Underground, Black Panther, and others I didn't even know existed. It seems a combination of peaceful protesters, opportunists, and anarchists of all kinds. Your thoughts?
Well, yes, and I know there's so many terms that are out there because there's so many different groups with different ideologies that you might be looking at, but really, what do you call it, the KKK, the black shirts that Mussolini used, the brown shirts that the Nazis and Hitler used, the Red Pioneers, the Communists used, BAM, or Antifa, these are all the same. There's no difference between them. These organizations are fascist organizations. The reason Antifa has named itself Antifa to say we're anti-fascist is just a marketing tool. And people who are very smart about how to try to recruit and sustain these type of organizations.
Well, this is a very difficult topic. After the break, we will discuss this with Sangari about all the protests, the unrest, the mayhem, which cancels the message, how we lost our way.
We will be right back with Amy Cabell and The Cure.
Life can bring many difficult situations. Domestic violence, addictions, poverty, and even sexual abuse by your loved ones. The issue is not stay there, but to overcome all obstacles and show that with the love of God, your husband, and your family, you can succeed. Love is the answer, God is the cure, reveals Amy Cabo's life. A warrior who didn't give up and achieved the dream of her life. You can get to know more about her and her story on GodIsTheCure.com or buying her book on Amazon.com.
Fell by the wayside, like everyone else. I hate you, I hate you, I hate you, but I was just kidding myself. Our every moment, I started a place. Cause now that the corner lie, here were the words that I needed to say. When you hurt under the surface, like troubled water running cold. Well, time can heal, but this won't.
Now we will continue with Amy Cabell and The Cure.
Welcome back, guys, and thanks for tuning in. This is Amy Cabell.
Please remember that you can listen to the radio show live through our app The Cure with Amy Cabell or later as a podcast.
The song that just played was Before You Go by Louis Capaldi. Who are we kidding? Most people are still good, despite how it looks. I focus on the peaceful protesters. And I see beautiful people caring, coming together with good intentions. I know it's difficult to see the destruction, violence, and the mayhem. We worry for the innocent bystanders and the peaceful protesters that may get caught up on it. Have we strayed away from the values we grew up with? The morals that Jesus taught us? God sees the hurt under the surface. We all end up being hurt in some way. Everyone loses. Time can heal, but hate won't. And even God says, so before you go, was there something I could have said to make your heart beat better? I know the storm you've had to weather. Was there something I could have said to make it all stop hurting? It kills me how your mind can make others feel so worthless. We're talking to Lieutenant Colonel Sangatti discussing, are we changing our values? And what do we do with what's going on today? Lieutenant Colonel, we were discussing how these peaceful protests have been infiltrated with different extremist groups, and you were explaining to us how dangerous these groups were, what their ideas were, and where they're coming from. What are their what's their goal? I mean, just destruction.
Well, look, it's what we call an insurgency, right? I was in the U.S. Special Operational Forces. I understand how insurgencies are created. I fought within insurgencies, and actually from 2014 to 2017, for your listeners who do not know, Near East Center for Strategic Engagement, we actually ran the military force structure for the Assyrian Christians. And if people read in the Bible, they read about Assyria in the first chapter of Genesis, and the Assyrian Christians were fighting to survive against ISIS both in Iraq and Syria. The first time I ever ran into what you call today Antifa, which is a modern KKK, these individuals were working with what is the Socialist YPG, which is a Kurdish, Muslim Kurdish group that is in Syria that was conducting attacks and insurgency operations in Turkey and other places against the U.S. wants and desires within the region. And they're very closely aligned with the Russians. So we had one of our commanders, Ilyas Nasser, who was ambushed and killed going to a peace meeting in 2015. And the individuals who ambushed and killed him were the Kurdish YPG, the socialists. At that time, they had Antifa folks that were fighting within their ranks. And their Antifa individuals were from the U.S. that were there to get the training need be to come back and use it on the streets in America. And today, what you see, as I say, Antifa is the modern version of the KKK. The KKK was initially used to suppress black votes. Later, you come to Antifa, which emerged from the attempts to prevent whole classes, in this case, from doing the same. So a street militia that uses violence to suppress the speech and votes is fascist in itself. So it is a organization that isn't just locally here established. Now, you may have a young man who has joined Antifa because he says it's anti-fascist. They market to him. Those individuals, and what we call them, we run insurgencies, is that useful idiot. It's not a term that you want to apply to them because some young men and women just don't know what Antifa is. They think it's here to make social change, but from the people who are running these organizations, they're considered a useful idiot that you have to have on the ground to legitimize yourself. So in this case, you get a internationally operating group that is socialist ideology, that is fascist in its ideology, has killed one of my commanders on the ground who was fighting for his rights and his family rights. And these organizations are now operating here. You have a lot of foreign money that comes into these organizations. We've been getting pictures out of Seattle, where if you put them just through the civilian facial recognition, you get a 40% hit on these individuals being tied to CHICOM, Chinese Communist Party. So when you have a uprising in your state, everybody gets involved.
Wow, and it looks like they've been in operation for years. And what it appears to me is like we're dealing with domestic terrorism. I mean, how can they go after our president? How is this even possible in the United States?
I think you're referring about the attack on the White House. That was kind of very organized, wasn't it?
They targeted our president. But the thing is, he just said, we live a lie. These anti-fascists, they hide behind the fact that they lie to us, just like they've lied to us. You know, how is it, let's say COVID-19, it was such a big scare. But if you're going to destroy and loot, and how about nobody can have funerals? But Judge Floyd gets as many funerals and viewings as he wants. It's a double standard, guys. And we have someone that's calling.
Oh, I have Danielle on the line.
Hi, Danny. Go ahead. You're live.
Hey, Hey, Mom. So I wanted to like go over, I think the biggest issue right now is really projection. There's a lot of projection. And I understand that the black race doesn't feel, they don't feel like they're privileged. And they feel like there's a lot of white privilege. And I feel like it's actually reversed, very reversed. Over 100,000 Americans didn't get to have funerals. And George Floyd gets 3 funerals. I'm not condoning what happened to him. It was wrong. I believe it was wrong. But he wasn't a great citizen either. Like, there's not... And the crime rates of black society, there are some very good black people, and there are some that aren't civil, you know, and there's a lot of dangerous neighborhoods. You look at the percentage of population, and the majority is black. If you look at the crime rate, there's 13% population of black people, but they have the biggest crime rate out of all the population. And people say to me, oh, well, there's more white people. Okay, if I have three, basically what it entails is if I have 3 black people, 2 out of those 3 black people can commit crimes. If I have 10 white people, 2 out of those 10 white people will commit crimes. That's basically what the statistics are showing. And it's because of the actions, because of their behavior that they have been able to cause their own racial profiling. So it's not white thinking, oh, they must be bad just because they're black. No, they must be bad because statistics show that what they have done is bad. They manipulate their own people to prevent them from being successful and educated. You see a black person that is becoming educated and wants to be successful, and then you have his friends from the ghetto that are like, oh, you're not one of us anymore. You're trying to act like a white person. There's no such thing as
Danny, listen,
like
I hate to interrupt you because we're coming up on a short break. I just want to give a quick description so that people realize you're not racist at all. You had a black roommate that almost killed you and left you permanently brain damaged. He left you permanently brain damaged. Yet you still have black friends. You don't blame them all. We'll be right back. Thank you for listening to The Cure.
We'll be right back with Amy Cabell and The Cure.
Life can bring many difficult situations. Domestic violence, addictions, poverty, and even sexual abuse by your loved ones. The issue is not stay there, but to overcome all obstacles and show that with the love of God, your husband, and your family, you can succeed. Love is the answer, God is the cure, reveals Amy Cabo's life. A warrior who didn't give up and achieved the dream of her life. You can get to know more about her and her story on GodIsTheCure.com or buying her book on Amazon.com.
It's crazy when the thing you love the most is the detriment. Let that sink in. You can think again when the hand you wanna hold is a weapon and you're nothing but skin. Oh, 'cause I keep digging myself down deeper. I won't stop till I get where you are. I keep running, I keep running.
We will continue with Amy Cabell and The Cure.
Welcome back. Remember, we're live every Saturday at 1 p.m. Eastern on your radio, on our app The Cure, or GodIsTheCure.com.
All shows are available as a video podcast or audio podcast. Just look for The Cure, where podcasts are.
The song that just played was Graveyard by Halsey. It's crazy how the heroes that we love the most, that protect the innocent from the ills of society, has become our detriment. And the weapon that we choose to believe in is nothing but skin. Because we keep getting ourselves down deeper and deeper. Soon we will be running till we get where you are, God. They say, I may be making a mistake, but God warned us we would get confused about what is right and wrong towards the end. Yet, we will follow you, Lord, no matter how far this goes. We know that when we go down the darkest roads, we are willing to follow you all the way to the graveyard. We are talking to Lieutenant Colonel Sangari about all the unrest fueled by hatred and the loss of our values as our institutions have slowly strayed away from God. Lieutenant Colonel, in New York, they reported, it stated that 84% in 2015 of the violent deaths of blacks are produced by black criminals. They come from black criminals. Those were shot. And last year, in 2019, out of 8 million people, roughly, in New York, only 10 unarmed black people have been killed by police. And from then, only 2 have been wrongful deaths, compared to 30 white people killed by police. So, Mr. Sangari, what do you think about defunding the police? Especially with being in Chicago and seeing the crime rate that you do, every major city, they've been defunding the police for years, and every major city crime rate has gone up.
Yeah, we're talking about political talking points, right? Politicians have these talking points that they kind of hang on to be able to use to help their base generate. Look, when you say you want to defund the police, there's a system process of what happens. So if you are a person from the other end of the aisle that says, I want to defund the police, you are creating a stronger national enforcement force by defunding the police. What happens? So the police force, in this case, at a local community, is under the jurisdiction. The chief executive for that police force is not a mayor. So if you're a mayor and you say, I'm going to defund the police, what you're doing is now you're going to push that police force into the hands of the sheriff. Your county sheriff, in this case for Illinois, would be the Cook County Sheriff, would get those police structures directly embedded in the sheriff department. The sheriff department itself now becomes larger than it was before, because even the politician still needs some kind of a format of a force to be able to enforce the laws and regulations they pass. So in this case, the mayor loses the capability of controlling the police. They push them into the hands of the sheriff, and the sheriff, by design, can deputize anybody he wants. So the sheriff can actually bring, if he wants, a battalion from, so all my friends are in North Carolina are now listening, 82nd Airborne, and deputize them. So actually, the federal dollars that we have that goes into the police force structure support, which would be under the control of these mayors who want to defund them, by their own mouth, they're actually destroying themselves, and they're actually making a national law enforcement structure much stronger than they would have wanted initially. So they're giving up a lot of states' rights by doing so. And I think the problem at hand is that the politician, you know, talks what he thinks is important for his base, but there's a physical process which actually goes against what his base would like anyway. So you're going to create a much more stronger national police force structure, in this case under the sheriffs, than you will do anything else. And in this case, the sheriffs are elected. And a sheriff who is elected could turn around and use that force directly inside of your community, where if the mayor complains about it, the sheriff says, well, I'm as elected as you are, so you need to keep your mouth shut and deal with it. These are the problems that I think sometimes are not understood from a system perspective when somebody says, let's go ahead and defund the police.
I think the biggest problem with defunding the police is that you're taking away their resources or the ability to protect the public, and crime will increase as it is just from the defunding that has been happening. In Houston alone, murders are up by 48%, aggravated assaults are up by 22%, and violent crimes are up double digits as a result. So these people that are asking for defunding the police, shouldn't we be asking for increase in training, supervision, and leadership positions?
Well, yes, look, most of the police departments get federal dollars anyway, correct? So the people who are, say, defund don't understand that when you defund something, you're just moving it from one location to another. So in this case, if I take them away from the mayors of the cities, who are much more local, who understand their neighborhoods much better, and I put it in the hands of the sheriff, who's looking at an entire Cook County-wise, it becomes more difficult there. If you look at it at heart, the political parties that we have that are the two parties that run our systems and how we try to execute our laws and enforce them are not that far apart. They are in how they talk to each other, but inherently they have to work within the same system structures. U.S. code doesn't change. How we use Title $10, Title $20 don't change. What functional 150.
I understand how it works in the I understand how it works. I'm sorry to interrupt you, but I understand how it works in the administrative part, but a lot of us don't deal with that. How will it affect the people? The people. The very same people that are asking the police to be defunded.
Well, that's what I'm saying. The people who are asking for it to be defunded want to defund it because they believe that the police force doesn't work. Well, the majority of the problems, let's take a look at what happened in Minneapolis.
Right.
When you have an individual, an American, regardless of the color, who died in police custody, it's an issue that we all have to be concerned about. When you are mayor of that city and you have received 18 different complaints about this particular officer and you have not taken any steps to try to resolve these issues and this individual is now dead, now you're the same person who's saying, trust me, I can fix the problem. And the way I'm going to do it by defunding the police or maybe relooking at disbanding what I already have as an enforcement structure, you're basically saying what I did and the steps I took is the reason why we led to these problems.
How about regular supervising and auditing? Looking into the situation.
Correct.
And, have somebody look over that person that's not doing their job. Obviously, a police officer should not have 18 complaints. That police officer should have listened to Floyd when he said he wasn't breathing. There's a lot of things that went wrong, but that doesn't justify the consequences.
That goes to the training of our police officers. You can nationalize a training. You could say, just like we have in the U.S. military, right? I joined the military from Chicago. However, the process of recruiting me, vetting me, putting me through the process of joining the military and the retention was across the board, regardless if somebody came out of Alaska, I came out of Chicago, somebody came from another state and from Florida. If you look at it from a national perspective and still keep the enforcement at the local levels, at the lowest levels possible, when in the hands of the elected officials, in this case, the mayors or the executives that execute, you could at least flush out some of the individuals that should not be a part of the policing process. But these are the things that get lost in the discussions, right? Because
yes.
We have 5 months away from an election. Everybody's kind of posturing for their wants and desire. Nobody knows what's about to happen on the streets because they can't control it. The current incumbents and the politicians that are...
We're about to go into break, so I'll just say the vigilante and the mob and the people that are stronger that can bully you will take over because there will not be enough police to call when you're in trouble. So good luck, guys. Cut off your nose to spite your own face.
No, but plus also that goes to training, obviously. I mean, come on.
They're the ones that hold law and order. And so what will we do? We appreciate those who help with law and order.
Okay, we have three other scholars. Hold on. So we'll be right back after the break to continue talking about that interesting topic.
When we return, we will continue talking about the things that are going on. God help us. Call us 866-34-TRUTH.
We will be right back with Amy Cabell and The Cure.
Beauty here.
now we will continue with Amy Cabo and The Cure.
Hi again, and thanks for tuning in. Remember, we're live every Saturday at 1 p.m. Eastern on your radio, on our app The Cure, social media, or godisthecure.com.
And later, you can listen to the show on a podcast, or actually you can watch it as a video podcast.
The song that just played was Need You Now by Plum. I always believed there was beauty here. I know there's heartache, but there's also meaning here. When things get very dark, we get tired of holding on. It's hard not to hurt, and many of us can't move on. How many times have you heard us crying out, God, please take this? How many of us have been shocked and in disbelief lately? Yet how many times have you given us the strength to just keep breathing, comforting us, and always by our side? We may not understand why evil happens, but faith requires trusting God despite the turmoil. Oh God, there's no greater time of need. God, we need you now.
Yes, I think we do. It's just been very interesting. But anyway, we continue talking to Lieutenant Colonel Sangari, who is helping us go through all these situations around us, protests, riots. Lieutenant Colonel, do you think that the police really brutalizes black people all the time, almost all the time, with impunity, as some media are saying? Or is that really a fact,
or a false rhetoric?
Problem isn't what we're looking at right now. We're still talking black, white. We're still saying that, you know, police brutality. We got to step back. We got to go all the way back to the founding of our nation, right? And in many of the correspondences that took place between the founders as well as the founding documents for our nation, it was clear that the United States was not only a nation based on personal liberty, but it was also based on personal responsibility, okay? So, and while these liberties and freedoms are important, we have seen that in the last century and a half or so that they have taken the lead, while the responsibility that we are supposed to have has been put on the reserve. This is where leadership comes in, right? So personal responsibility is
and accountability.
Provides meaning in our lives, right? As you
yes.
say, but we cultivate ourselves.
Oh, we have four callers on the line. Let's try to get some questions. Is that okay? So we have John. John,
hello.
You are online. What can we do for you?
I'm concerned as far as whenever we have talk concerning two sides of something, that you only have one side on the program.
That is,
I was listening to the radio today, and I saw how all the stations just about are just, you know, Caucasian driven. So the, when you're trying to hold on to your situation, you're going to not be listening to the other side. And what we need in America is for people to really read the history of slavery and Reconstruction. So most people have not read, they do not know the life of the people and how they live. So you can't talk for them. They need to get into the picture. And we have this opportunity to change, but it's going to mean that, like, it's like if you've been doing, if it's appearing that you've been doing wrong, then you're going to have to say, well, we've been doing wrong and we're going to change. But if you try to protect yourself and not listen, then you have the same type of situation. Also, I think that the ministers have not been speaking up for, you know, centuries. I mean, they
If I may ask you, please help me understand this, because I understand that slavery was a long time ago. Is there like a memory that people feel like they're oppressed because of it? Because personally, when I came to Virginia from the Dominican Republic, speaking only Spanish, they told me, go back to the banana boat where you came from. When I went to get food stamps, because of the way that I look, they said that I'm not really desperate and I can get a boyfriend instead. We lived in black neighborhoods most of our lives, completely black. We were the ones standing out because we were poor. But I never witnessed any racism against blacks. I thought Martin Luther King took care of that. But I never felt oppressed. I never started riots. I understand there's racism. And I understand the world's not fair. But I also understand that slavery isn't happening these days.
And maybe the problem is more economical than a skin.
If I may,
yeah, Lieutenant Colonel.
If I may, maybe I can answer our caller's question and Amy, what's happening? Look, there is a movement that has to take place, and this movement has to address some of the issues that we have socially in the country. The problem is, today, the movement has individuals that have come from outside, as I mentioned earlier, you know, whether it be the Chinese Communist Party, whether it be the Russians, through ties to Antifa and others that have really muddled the waters, because they're here to do it because they want to inflame these issues.
And division.
Everybody has a different experience.
And actually divide us.
I didn't know there was racism. I'm shocked. I mean, the little instances that I have, I didn't think was a big deal.
Look, we got to go back in the black community. I would say take some lessons learned from previous leaderships in the black community. The National Negro Congress when we were looking at segregation was Philip A. Randolph. He had planned the first and coordinated actually the first march on Washington. Okay, he started to work on that, and the way he wanted to initially create it, he wanted a new coalition that was going to help with the mass demonstrations. In that process, his goal was to force the government, just like the demonstrators you have today, to end segregation. It wasn't just segregation the military was going after, but it was also in the defense industry. So what he did was he allied himself with other individuals. In this case, he allied himself with the National Association for the Advancement of Colored People, which is the NACP, the Federal Council on Negro Affairs, and the National Urban League. All these groups that he chose were moderate civil rights organizations that initially wanted to first create order internally within their communities, then put a charge to going after the changes. What they did was they isolated the communists that wanted to come and join these groups out. They said this has to be a black lead and it has to be a peaceful demonstration.
Nice.
Fast forward to where Martin Luther King comes in, he says, same thing. We need to be able to get the individuals who are anti-war at that time out of our discussion. That's why they were able to have a peaceful movement and it wasn't hijacked by others. Today's movements are being hijacked by others. That's why the messaging gets lost for the black community.
That's the issue.
Because, there is another
racism and there is inequality, and these issues have to be addressed, but there's an appropriate way to do it where the message really gets across.
Right, and then, yes, I think bottom line also we can say that this happens with conversation between us. Civil conversations
Between us. I mean, it depends on which kid I'm talking to. One kid I can have a two-way conversation. The other one, it's a one-way conversation. So trust me, it hits home. And I think it's division. I think that's what the enemy wants. The more divided they can keep us, the less that people can look at their leaders that have been failing them with policies that have kept them desperate and upset, that have incited hate and anger, because that's how they push their agenda.
Oops, we have only a few minutes left, so we need to start finishing up.
Okay, we're almost finished with today's show. So thank you again, Lieutenant Colonel Sangari. What an honor it is to have you on the show. If you're running for the 9th District of Illinois, a decorated 20-plus year veteran of the U.S. Army and Special Operations Forces.
Running for the United States Congress.
More information on Lieutenant Colonel Sangari can be found on his website, nec-ce.com.
Thank you for your service.
Thank you. NEC-SC.com and so Volt Singeri, which tells you about what we're doing as far as the race is concerned. Much appreciate the time and the effort, and we'll be fine, everybody.
Absolutely.
Thank you.
We will eventually get to understand each other and create the systems we need to enforce what is good for all of us.
Thank you.
Okay, so let's pray. We always finish with a prayer, and this is a prayer for peace in troubled times. Lord, give your people peace, that we may shine brightly in a dark world. Grant us the courage to live faithfully, even in the midst of hard times. Let our fear of you be the beginning of wisdom, rather than allowing the fear of the world to drive our actions. Help us to embrace our heavenly citizenship and to live strangely in the midst of a world that needs to know you. Show your mercy and heal those who are suffering in your fallen creation. Most of all, Lord, come, restore the world you have made and make all things new. We pray that your will be done. Amen.
Amen.
And I apologize for the other callers that we couldn't get to. Apparently, this is a very big topic, and 1 hour is never enough.
Yes.
But, and also thanks to the Christian car guy, Robbie Dillmore, who is awesome. I love his show. Please check it out.
Oh, Kingdom Pursuit, also his show.
Wow, he does too. That's awesome. This is Amy Cabo. You've been listening to The Cure.
Please check our podcast, The Cure, our app, also The Cure, or our website, GodIsTheCure.com. And please subscribe to the podcast so you don't miss an episode and rate it.
And until next week, keep safe in this now pandemic / crisis. We'll go through this together. We've been through problems in the past.
Thank you for listening. God bless. Here with Amy Cabo. For more information or to get Amy's book, Love is the Answer, God is the Cure, or to listen to the podcasts of previous shows, visit GodIsTheCure.com.